novelist sits down to create characters in a story, they're basically two paths they can take. They can create a story from a world of fantasy or a story from a world of reality. And the best-selling works of my next guest today, thanks to his detailed use of what we face in our reality that we exist in, combined with his expert, insightful intertwining of what-ifs, gives you, the reader, an exciting story to be sure, living, breathing characters, and actually a reason to pause and ask yourself, well, what would you do if this happened? His latest bestseller features his characters Jake Grafton, Tommy Carmelini in Liberty's Last Stand. And to get the lowdown on Liberty's Last Stand, we say hello to Stephen Koons. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
And it's great to talk with you. Koons, that's Koonts.com. That is Stephen's website. You can read an excerpt, and that's all it's going to take for you to want to get a copy of Liberty's Last Stand, because Stephen, you got people on a wild ride, and a lot of it is based on the hints of reality we see today. And well, give us an overview. What is the setting and the setup with Liberty's Last Stand?
Well, the premise is that a terrorist incident is the excuse for the president to declare martial law, suspend the Constitution, and begin locking up his political enemies. And so Texas declares its independence and secedes from the Union, followed by a handful of other states. So it's another American Civil War, but instead of North versus South, it's right versus left.
I talk with authors over the years, and they've done stories as far as child abduction, domestic violence, military service, and things along those lines. With Liberty's Last Stand, what was the research that went into this? Because you write some in great detail some of the scenes ranging from military actions, civil unrest, and terrorist attacks.
Well, obviously, I try to find out what I need to know to spin a tale. Most of the research is done online. You know, the Internet is a fantastic research tool anymore. It used to be I went to the libraries and I haunted libraries, but now I haunt the Internet.
Was there a point with Liberty's Last Stand as you're developing the story? Well, first of all, did you know where the story was going to go? Is this one of those cases where you had it pretty much plotted and planned at the first page, or did you get to a point where it's like, well, I thought we were going to go left, but I think we're going to go right here?
Well, I have written 37 books and 16 of them bestsellers, but I found that you have to know where you're going before you start. You have to know what the destination is, how you're going to solve the main conflict in the story, and what is your climax. And so I had it figured out what I wanted to do, and then I wrote the book, only to find that my editor at Regnery, Harry Crocker, decided that he wanted a different ending. So the ending had to be rewritten. And that's all part of it, too. That's why we have editors.
I always think back, there was a comment, the comedian John Cleese, who was part of Monty Python's Flying Circus, they're asking him about writing comedy, and he goes, the beginning and the ending are the easy part. It's that damn middle that's the royal pain in the ass.
Well, I would tend to disagree. I think the beginning and the end are the hard parts. You know, the climax is like a tree in the forest. And there's many ways to get there, and you have to pick a starting spot. And as times you ride along, you find out, I picked the wrong place to start this tale. And I throw it out, go back, and start all over. Liberty's Last Stand, what you read in the book, is actually the third start.
Talking with Stephen Koons with his new book, Liberty's Last Stand. Koonts.com is his website. You can read an excerpt then. Get a copy that way as well, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. So much of what you write in Liberty's Last Stand is based on political reality / possibilities. People listening right now might be thinking of the secession of Texas. That was something Rick Perry, when he was governor, had thrown out there, whether it was a political grandstand, whatever the case may be. Was there a point where you were creating a scene, an event, or an action of a character, and you thought, all right, I got to bring that back a little bit. That's going a little too far.
Yes, I had those moments. And what I tried to do was to take some of the themes and things that are happening in America now, the political hot-button issues, put them all in the blender, turn it on, and then see what came out. And it is an attempt to capture America today. Obviously, I wrote the book in 2015, but still, I thought it would be apropos to today's reader with terrorism, illegal immigration, federal government overreach, the Texas secession talk. There's 200,000 people have signed a petition currently with the Texas legislature asking the legislature to declare Texas independent of the United States. So this is more than just a few crackpots. This is a lot of people down there that are very unhappy, and they're doing something about it. I guess they're getting their names on federal hit lists.
That's one thing. That's one way to get attention, and it's something else you write about with Liberty's Last Stand, how government surveillance watches people in more ways than we care to think. It's not just through a Social Security number. And what's something, too, when you're writing a book like Liberty's Last Stand, Stephen, are you doing it just for the entertainment value, or is this a case where, as you ran down that list of issues that Liberty's Last Stand contains in its plot line, did you want to spark people to start thinking about these things and become more concerned, more informed?
Well, I have written a great many books just to entertain, but I wanted to do something a little more gravitas in this book. And so I wanted to hit all these political angles and spin a tale of what might happen. And the idea is to leave people thinking about these issues. It is a departure for me. My other books are pretty non-political. And this one, by design, was as political as I could make it. It's not, a lot of people are not going to like it. And, they probably shouldn't buy it. It's for people that are worried about what's happening in America today. If you're not worried, pass it up.
I was looking at some of the reviews, much like when I read news articles, I look at the comments section because it gives you a real good idea of what the proactive people are thinking to the right, to left, whatever the case may be. And looking at some of the reviews on various book sites, you've touched the nerve both on a positive and negative way with quite a few people with Liberty's Last Stand.
I'm sorry, say again?
You've touched a nerve on the positive and negative side with a lot of people on Liberty's Last Stand based upon some of the comments people are dropping about the book.
Well, I hope trying to do that, and I'm delighted that you think I succeeded. But, all writers do is the best they can do, and you think you know how the book is going to be received, but you don't until it comes out, and average readers all over the place with all kinds of points of view begin to read it and chime in on what they think.
Oh, Stephen Kuntz with his new bestseller, Liberty's Last Stand. Kuntz, Kuntz.com is his website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. One thing I've always liked about your books is you have star characters like Jake Grafton and Tommy Carmelini, but the characters don't overrun the story. You're able to do a balance and do it in a believable way that the reader just doesn't focus on the character. They focus on the character and the story.
Well, thank you. That's a very wonderful comment, perceptive, I hope. And I try to do that. The story, first of all, has to, have a plot. And the characters are just a way to carry the plot forward. They're not, and it's, we're not into the life of these heroes or characters in the story. What we're really after is how to spin the tale along. And it's a fine line. Sometimes, you sit back and say, no, that's too much. I got to take some of this out. And we do. And I have my wife, read this, my stuff every night. I write, a scene or a partial chapter, and I print it off, and she reads it, and I like to get her input. And she helps keep me on the straight and narrow.
and given that she's still willing to read your work, it must be doing good for her then, too.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to become a writer? What was it that made writing seem to be the thing you wanted to do with your life?
Oh, heavens. I am a serious book nut. I love to read. I have all my life. Obviously, when I was young, I was more worried about earning a living. I didn't think I had a Chinaman's chance of ever becoming a writer and getting paid for it. And it wasn't until I got a divorce in 1984 that I sat down and said, okay, for the first time in my life, I have plenty of time and absolutely no money. And so I might as well spend it productively and see if I can write this novel about Vietnam that I always wanted to write. And so I wrote about what it was like to be an attack pilot in Vietnam from a carrier attack pilot, which I had done. And so I was mining my own experiences. And to my absolute amazement, the book became a huge bestseller, spent 28 weeks on the bestseller list. And, you know, as the rest, as they say, is history. It launched my writing career.
And you've had works that you've said have been bestsellers. You've had works that have become films. Is having had that happen in the past, is it challenging to keep from writing a book with the idea of, well, let me write this so I can improve my odds for it to become a film?
Well, I don't think in today's environment, planning to sell a book to the movie industry is very viable. You know, they don't make this anywhere near as many movies as they used to make, and they would rather develop it themselves and not spend any money on acquiring a property. And so they just don't do many. And so I think that you're better off planning on making money selling it to readers and people who want to listen to the book as an audio book. But the film market is pretty tough.
And plus, at least back in the day, when a writer gave the book over to a film or TV company, you pretty much lost control of it, and they did with it whatever you want. I used to talk a lot with Robert B. Parker, who wrote the Spencer detective novels. He hated that TV show back in the 80s because of what they did to his characters.
Yeah, but he took the money. I had one book, my first one, Flight of the Intruder, made into a movie, and you know, I didn't think it was the greatest movie in the world, and had I been the director, I would have done it different. But on the other hand, a great many people that had never read my stuff were introduced to it, and so it did help book sales. And so, you know, I'd be delighted to let them have it again as long as they spell my name right.
And the check clears.
And the check doesn't bounce, you know. And unfortunately, it's a comment on our society that so many people don't read. And that is sad, but that's reality.
Liberty's Last Stand. Learn more about it. Read an excerpt of it at Koontz.com. That's Coonts. Best-selling novelist, and there's a reason for that. He writes with quality, and he writes with a passion, and he writes with care, and his characters come to life for you. That adds to the story as well. Stephen Koontz, thanks for being here today.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your show.